Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. In late August, two Delaware County women filed a challenge with the Ohio Secretary of State's office claiming that Libertarian presidential candidate Gary Johnson should be removed from Ohio's statewide ballot. They dropped their challenge on September 1st, the day after the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals dismissed the Ohio General Assembly's challenge to a ballot slot for the Libertarian Party in 2012. So what's so important about the Libertarian Party on the Ohio ballot? What difference does it make? And how are third-party candidates in general faring this election season? Joining us now to talk about that is OSU political scientist Tony Mugend. Welcome to the show, Tony.
Thank you, Ann. I'm glad to be here.
So Democrat Al Gore's narrow loss to Republican George W. Bush in 2000 was widely blamed on Ralph Nader, the Green Party candidate that year who took votes from Gore in the swing states that year of New Hampshire and Florida. But both major parties said that they aren't worried about similar threats this year, particularly with Libertarian candidate Johnson. But there have been moves to keep his name off the ballot in Ohio. So what do we make of that? Does it really matter?
Well, what matters is that the president, as we saw in 2000, is elected by a majority in the Electoral College, not by the public vote. The way the Electoral College works is that each state sends a number of representatives equal to its congressional delegation plus two senators, and then in addition, there are three Electoral College members from the Washington, D.C. The way the Electoral College candidates are chosen is that the majority in all states but Maine and Nebraska, the person winning the most votes in the state carries all the Electoral College candidates. Mm-hmm. So one of the reasons Ohio is important this election and in every election, but especially important this election, is that whoever gets more votes, Mr. Obama or Mr. Romney, will carry all 20 Electoral College votes. In Maine and Nebraska, they allocate them proportionately to the share of the vote. So third-party candidates are feared by the major parties to the extent that the candidates will be seen to be taking votes disproportionately from that party. So Virgil Gooding in Virginia, for example, is unlikely to attract many Democratic votes.
But he could attract just enough.
He could take votes from Mr. Romney,
right,
which would allow Mr. Obama to sneak in past Mr. Romney, something he would not have been able to do without Mr. Good's presence. Because, again, Virginia is a swing state. The ballot's going to be very close.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, votes, we now, after 2000, we now think that, you know, we now know that a couple of thousand votes can be very important. And if a third-party candidate takes them from a party, then they risk losing all the Electoral College votes for that state.
My guest is Tony Mugend. He's an OSU professor of political science. If you have a question or comment, we're talking about third-party candidates and the presidential election this year. Are you supporting a third-party candidate out there? Give us a call and tell us why. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can also go to our Facebook page. On the Ohio ballot this year, of course, we have Barack Obama and Mitt Romney, also Virgil Good. With the Constitution Party, Gary Johnson, the Libertarian Party, Jill Stein, with the Green Party, Stuart Alexander, with the Socialist Party, and Richard Duncan, a non-party candidate. All of them also have vice presidential running mates as well. Give us a call and tell us if you're supporting any of those third-party candidates on the Ohio ballot this year, 614-292-8513, and tell us why. So it's interesting, across the nation, there is no shortage of candidates, third-party candidates, but there is a dearth of them on many ballots.
Yes, well, they have to satisfy requirements to get onto state ballots, and they have to do it state by state.
Are some states easier than others?
Oh, yes, mm-hmm. in the number of endorsements they have to get on the ballot. And so Mr. Johnson, for example, I think is probably maybe the most successful in this regard, in that he's on the ballot in 37 states.
The Libertarian
mm-hmm. candidate, yes. Former Republican governor of New Mexico.
So how does Ohio rank? Is Ohio easy, middle of the road, difficult to get in?
Do you know what? That's a hard question to answer because you have to have all the information on all 50 states. But I would say it's middling in terms of getting your name on the presidential.
So having, as far as third-party candidates, having 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 on is pretty typical then.
Yes, and and I don't think either Mr. Romney or Mr. Obama are kind of worried about third-party candidates in Ohio or indeed in any state this election, because none of them seem to have very much media visibility. I don't think they see any of these third-party candidates as a threat.
So why, in your opinion, do they persist? Not only year after year in some parties, but new parties sprout up, like the Justice Party, for instance, this year.
Well, I think there are lots of reasons, but there are two basic reasons. One, they think that an issue has arisen which the major parties, the Democrats and Republicans, are not addressing. And this brings up, is related to the second reason, which they think their time has come. So there's a huge anti-government wave sweeping across the United States in this moment. So Mr. Johnson are trying to ride that wave. There's a stronger swell of anti-government sentiment than, well, certainly in the last 20 years, I think, in the U.S. And so they think their time has come.
Maybe the Ross Perot era.
Yes. And then the other consideration, I think, even though they know they're fighting a lost cause in sense of their own chances of becoming president, what they ultimately hope is that they will prove to be sufficiently popular that the major parties will take up their issue. In other words, the major parties will absorb the issue and hope to win support as a result of embracing those issues.
The recent debate, I guess it was in a Chicago hotel room, with Larry King, did focus on different kinds of issues than what we heard in the three major, the three presidential debates. Chief among them, what really jumped out for a lot of people was talk about legalizing marijuana.
Yes.
Or the decriminalizations of drugs.
Yes. The problem with issues like that, and it's the same with abortion to some extent, is the American public is divided on it. So,
but isn't the American public divided on everything?
No, not really. They want a strong economy. They want high employment. I mean, there are certain issues,
okay,
which are what political scientists call valence issues. Everybody wants them. Everybody wants economic growth, economic well-being, low unemployment, this kind of thing. But when, as with abortion, when the public is divided, it's not quite sure. And if you start trying to make electoral hay with this issue, you're not quite sure whether it will just rebound on you and kind of leave egg all over your face. So they tend to stay away from divisive issues.
So everybody agrees we want a stronger economy, but they don't necessarily agree on how to achieve that. Not everybody agrees. It's not a question of how to achieve the legalization of marijuana. They're just split as far as whether it should be legalized or not, and that's the distinction.
Yes. There. Well, Mr. Romney, for example, if he advocated the legalization of marijuana, I mean, he would risk mass defection. Well, maybe not mass, but he would risk substantial defections from Republicans who think that drugs are the devil, almost. They are the beginning of the end. They are a threat to our social order, a threat to our culture, and so he would risk losing those votes with no guarantee that he would get matching votes from the Democratic Party, or even more votes from Democratic citizens, because they, for one reason, for example, they might not feel so strongly about the marijuana issue. Mm-hmm. I think some Republicans would feel very strongly about it. Many Democrats, they might not approve of drugs, but it's unlikely, I think, that they would abandon their traditional party allegiance as a result of Mr. Romney advocating the legalization of drugs.
Of course, just for folks who might be tuning in, Mitt Romney does not advocate the legalization of marijuana. I just want to make sure. Yes. Brady in Newark, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Brady.
Oh, hi. Thank you so much. Okay. Now, it was interesting the direction the conversation was going there, because I was speaking on Jill Stein, the Green Party representative this year, and it was interesting to see during the second debate, I saw a RT video that she was arrested at the entrance of the debate and then proceeded to be held for 8 hours during the debates happening. So it's interesting to see how our candidates, once it gets to brass tacks, like when they show up to these debates, how they're initially handled. And so along with the suppression of their identity through mainstream media outlets and you know, so people don't really know who they are, it's interesting to see how they're initially reacted to when these actual situations come to be, like these conventions and debates and whatnot.
Jill Stein was supposed to be on the show today, but of course the weather on the East Coast prevented that. What about that? Is the media colluding with the major parties, Tony Mugen, in suppressing their...
No, I don't think conspiracy theories wash well.
Well, maybe not conspiratorially, but...
Well, collusion is perhaps a mild form of conspiracy,
okay.
But it's... but no, I mean, the media want audiences. They concentrate on the major figures, the major parties. Now, when a third party candidate breaks through, he can attract substantial media attendance. So Ross Perot, for example, in 1992, was actually allowed to take part in the presidential debate that year, that election, I think because he'd achieved a sufficient level of popularity that the mainstream parties felt that it was justified to include him in the debates.
Brady, are you voting for Jill Stein?
Well, yeah, I'm definitely. I was thinking between her and Ron Paul. I was just going to write him in, you know, for the heck of it. But it's an interesting thing because, you know, it's kind of you referenced back to 1992. I was a little more accepting then, but it kind of seems, you know, when she's trying to demonstrate her views, you know, and making her way to the second presidential debate, and she's arrested, and it kind of shows, you know, how free thinking have our debates become.
Well, I think the issue is what she was arrested for and whether it was justifiable.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Brady, I want to turn to Jesse real quick. Thanks a lot for your call. We appreciate
it. Take care.
Yep, you bet. Jesse in Columbus, you also support Jill Stein. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. I'm supporting Jill Stein this year, primarily because I'm a progressive, and I feel like the entire political discussion has moved too far to the right. The Republicans are extremist, in my opinion, and the Democrats have moved further to the right, and it seems like it's difficult to find real progressives nowadays.
Okay. Well, thanks, Jesse, for calling.
Yep.
Thanks for listening. 614-292-8513 is the number to call if you'd like to join the conversation. I would like to thank my guest this segment, Tony Mugen, OSU professor of political science, for joining us and talking about it. Thanks a lot, Tony.
Okay, my pleasure, Anne. Thank you.
Also, coming up next, Virgil Good. He is with the Constitution Party. And after that, we're going to be talking with former Salt Lake City Mayor Rocky Anderson. He's the of the newly formed Justice Party. He's the presidential candidate for that party. So you can stay with us, and we'll be right back. This is All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Thank you. in commercial radio in depth means a minute 30. On much of public radio, you can hear stories stretched to 6 or 7 minutes. On Talk of the Nation, we're not talking in depth until we've hit the half-hour mark. I'm Neil Cownan. Take your time with the discussion on Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
And Talk of the Nation this afternoon from 2 until 4. Join Neil Cownan for special coverage of the remnants of Hurricane Sandy. And also stay with 89.7 NPR News for continuing coverage of the storm and its aftermath. We'll be airing a special from NPR today from noon until 2. And expect rain and snow today with wind gusts up to 50 miles per hour here in Columbus. And a lot of rain afternoon today, a high of 42. More rain for tonight. The rain will mix with some snow overnight, a low of 36 degrees. And a rain-snow mix to start the day on Wednesday, becoming rain in the afternoon, a high of 46 degrees. Support for 89.7 comes from the other paper, Columbus's News and Entertainment Weekly, on newsstands every Thursday and online at theotherpaper.com. And All Sides continues here on 89.7 NPR News.
Third-party candidates are always with us, but most Americans couldn't tell you who they are. Joining us now is one such candidate, Constitution Party presidential candidate and former Congressman Virgil Good of Rocky Mount, Virginia. Virgil Good served as a Virginia state senator from 1973 to 1997 when he was elected to the U.S. House of Representatives. He served in Congress as a Democrat, an independent, and then a Republican before losing his Southwest Virginia seat in 2008. Welcome to the show, Virgil Good.
Thank you, Ann. Good to be with you.
You've been a member of two major parties, the Democrats and the Republicans, so you know from the inside that the odds and the money is against you. Did you switch, Jeff, after you couldn't make it as a Republican, or why did you switch?
No, I got tired of the Republicans giving lip service to illegal immigration and jobs in America for U.S. citizens first and for balancing the budget. I believe in balancing the budget. I didn't vote for the Democratic budget resolutions. I didn't vote for most of the Republican budget resolutions. They never balanced. They're unwilling to cut to bring balance. Obama's budget was $1 trillion in deficit this year. Paul Ryan's budget was over $600 billion in deficit. Neither Romney nor Obama will balance the budget within 4 years, regardless of which one you elect. I will submit a balanced budget to Congress. And most importantly, of all the candidates, third-party candidates, Romney and Obama too, mm-hmm. I am the only candidate that stands up for American jobs for U.S. citizens first by calling for a moratorium on most green card admissions into the United States. We are being swamped by foreign workers, and we are sending far too many jobs overseas to foreign countries.
Let me ask you this. If you're probably not going to get elected, and I was wondering, what's the tipping point for you as a candidate when you decide to leave a party that does have a foothold in Congress and in the Oval Office?
Well, having a foothold and doing something is entirely different things. You're right. Democrats and Republicans have a foothold, but they're not doing anything about jobs in America for American citizens first because they won't tackle illegal immigration and they won't reduce legal immigration. Both Democrats and Republicans are coddlers of the Hispanic caucus, and I won't be. I'll stand up for what's right first.
There are branches of the Republican Party, though, that share much of the platform of the Constitution Party. Why not stay inside the party and change it from inside?
Not going to happen.
Okay.
I was there for 12 years in Congress. They kicked Tom Tancredo aside. They shuffled Duncan Hunter, who was good on immigration, good on defense. But he wasn't a PC enough for him. They shuffle him aside. Romney is a chameleon. He'll take any position he can take to get elected. On the gay marriage issue, Romney has met secretly with the log cabin Republicans, and they are endorsing him. If they are endorsing him, you can be sure he's got a pro-homosexual agenda in his back pocket that he'll pull out after he's elected.
Let me ask you this, Virgil Good. Why doesn't the party run candidates in local races at the very local level for school
board?
Oh,
well, they do. We've got got candidates in Nevada, for example, running for nearly every congressional seat for U.S. Senate. We've got them running in Wyoming. We have a few running in Virginia. We've got candidates running at the local level in West Virginia. There's a number running. I don't know, there are a few at the local level in Ohio, but no statewide candidates. In the past, we've had some statewide candidates. In Missouri, we have statewide candidates. We've got statewide candidates in Michigan. Now in Michigan, the Constitution Party is known as the U.S. Taxpayers Party.
Is that a problem sometimes when the parties are known as different things in different states? How do you get that your identity across that way?
I don't see it as much of a problem because most politics is focused on the state level.
Mm-hmm.
But the U.S. Taxpayers Party, at one time the Constitution Party was known as the U.S. Taxpayers Party. And in Nevada, for example, we're the Independent American Party. So the name is not the same. By far, most states have it as the Constitution Party. We are on in nearly every state that swing state. We're on in New Hampshire. We're on in Florida. We're on in, as I said, Missouri and in Ohio. You don't have to write us in Ohio. We're on mm-hmm. in Iowa. We're on in Nevada. We're on in Colorado
mm-hmm.
And Michigan and nearly every swing state.
614-292-8513 is the number to call if you'd like to join the conversation. My guest this hour is Virgil Good. He is the presidential candidate for the Constitution Party. He's from Rocky Mount, Virginia. He's calling us from there. Thank goodness the weather didn't get you down too hard in Rocky Mount. Sarah, in Columbus, you're on the air with Virgil Good. Welcome.
Hi, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted to say, I think that the mainstream media is biased against third-party candidates. I think that it's outrageous that we only have two choices for president. How are we supposed to know who else we have to choose if we don't get to hear everyone who's available?
Did you listen to the debates or watch the debates among the third-party candidates, Sarah?
I did.
You did?
Well, Sarah, there is going to be another debate among the major third-party candidates on Sunday, 7:30 p.m. in Washington, D.C. It's hosted by Ralph Nader, and he anticipates it being on the Internet and also on C-SPAN, so you could listen to that then. I would point out the reason, a big factor in the Constitution Party and some of the other third parties not getting much media coverage is all the big money is with the Democrats and Republicans. If you want a candidate, Obama or Romney, that's beholden to the super PACs, you need to vote for one of them. But I'm not taking any political action committee money. And if you want a candidate that's grassroots, not taking any donation over $200. And I'm opposed to federal funding of elections. That sets me apart from Jill Stein and Gary Johnson and Rocky Anderson. I don't think taxpayers should have paid for the Democratic, a substantial part of the Democratic National Convention or the Republican National Convention. You got to balance the budget. And those things I just mentioned are something that's easy to cut.
Okay, Sarah, thanks for your call. Sarah, let me ask you this. If you don't mind telling us, is there someone you're leaning toward at this point that's not a major party candidate?
Well, I like Stein, but I'm still up in the air. It's probably going to come down to the wire for me.
Okay. All right. Sarah, thanks again.
Thank you.
Take care. You're listening to All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. If you have a question or comment for my guest, Virgil Good, he is the presidential candidate for the Constitution Party. Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. From Samuel via email, he asks, how does the Constitution Party of Mr. Good differ from the views of Ron Paul? Would the party ever back someone like Paul with a name known more nationally? Virgil Good?
I think many in the Constitution Party agree with many of Ron Paul's position. I was in Ron Paul's study group. I don't I don't agree with everything that Ron Paul is for, but I agreed with many of it. He was very good on voting against foreign aid. I think that's a huge wasteful giveaway that costs between $30 and $50 billion every year. And I certainly concurred with Ron Paul on that. I also concurred with Ron Paul on having a full audit of the Federal Reserve. I also believe that, like Ron Paul, now we may come from different directions on it, that we need to retrench from the free trade agreements. He voted against CAFTA. I voted against CAFTA. He was opposed to MFN with China and PNTR with China, and so was I. So we had a number of areas of agreement. I am probably strongly opposed to illegal immigration. I do not believe in any open borders, and I'm not sure that Ron Paul shares that view to the same extent that I do, but I find Ron Paul to be a very honorable person, sincere, and I enjoyed being in Congress with him, and particularly in the Liberty Study Group.
Once again, my guest is Virgil Good, Constitution Party candidate for president. Mark in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Mark.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
Hi. Well, I was one of those undecided Ohio voters that everyone was after, but the two major parties would be disappointed because it wasn't between Obama and Romney that I was trying to decide. It was between a number of the third-party candidates, so I really appreciate this segment. I do agree with a number of the positions of your guest, Virgil Good, and the Constitutional Party. I agree with some things from Jill Stein. Gary Johnson, Libertarian. Ron Paul was my choice, but when he was eliminated, then I was kind of debating between some of the third party candidates, and I would actually prefer probably any of the third party candidates who are in the third party candidate debates over either of the main parties, because I think what would be great is if a lot of the independents or people who are frustrated with the two party system would get together and support a reform party whose primary goal was to just make it less of a two-party system and open it up and get rid of some of these, you know, campaign finance issues and that sort of thing, so that it would open it up to more diversity of political opinion and party.
Virgil Good, given what you know about being inside the party power structure, whether it was a Democratic Party or the Republican Party, once you do get into power, how difficult is it to maybe do what Mark is suggesting, then open it up to more people, open it up to more parties, make it easier for others?
Well, I was just going to say that, as you suggested and Mark has indicated, the Democrats and Republicans really don't want other views out there. The Republicans have done everything they can to squelch Ron Paul and to squelch me. They've spent between $500,000 and $1 million to try to keep me off the ballot in Virginia. And on Ron Paul's situation, he played by the rules. He was on in more than five states. They changed the rules after they got to the convention, so he couldn't speak and his delegates couldn't vote for him. It's just an example of heavy-handedness by the Republicans, and I think they made a big mistake in doing that. I think it alienated a number of Ron Paul people, and they have a right to be mad. Ron Paul worked hard in the primaries. He didn't win, but he deserved to have his voice heard at the convention, and they shut him out. They don't want my voice speaking in Virginia and in Ohio. They don't want us my voice speaking anywhere, because a whole lot of citizens out there agree with me about balancing the budget now. Mm-hmm. Preserving jobs in America for American citizens and not bringing in so many foreign workers. Huge debt, and the Republicans don't want to hear it. The big money people behind the Republicans want to bring in all these foreign workers they can because it drives down wages. And they are interested in that bottom line ahead of the best welfare of the average citizen in this country.
Mark?
Yes.
What are you leaning toward at this point?
Well, I did actually cast my vote, and it was a really tough decision, and like I said, I could have gone with a number of them, but just on principle, because Ron Paul was who was doing very well. So I wrote in Ron Paul, but I wrote in Vice President Dennis Kucinich, who happened to be my two favorite people in Washington that I'm familiar with. And unfortunately, Dennis Kucinich got pushed out of his district by redistricting. And they're friends, and they get along, and they're both on very opposite sides on a lot of things. They actually agree on a lot of things. There are some of the most important things, like non-interventionism, a couple of the key issues like that, and reform, of these things that are leading to this two-party system where, some people don't feel like they have a choice or that they, that their voice is being heard. So I thank your guest, and thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you, Mark. Thanks for calling. We have an email from Jason. He writes, it is my observation as a man who works in IT. Currently, companies who need employees who are technically competent cannot find enough workers, and they turn to immigrants to get talent. As a result, the regulations for workers here with green cards actually end up costing entrepreneurs in this sector a lot of money to hire lawyers, among other things. The conclusion I draw from this is that making immigration harder or impossible would badly damage the most thriving business sector in our country. The long and the short of it is there is a shortage of talent in the U.S. I'd like your guest's reaction to this.
Disagree more with that person. I talked to an IT person after the debate in Chicago. There's a group of hundreds and even thousands of workers in this country that can't get jobs because the IT company wants to bring in these lower persons that'll take a lower salary from India and from other Asian countries and some from the Middle East. And it's the IT leadership that wants to bring them in just so they can drive down wages. What we need to do is open up our schools and accept more good U.S. citizens. When I was in Congress, I wrote hundreds and hundreds of recommendations for good students wanting to go to engineering, wanting to get into the math, and wanting to get into sciences, wanting to go to medical school, and a lot did not get in because they were displaced by foreigners because they would pay out-of-state rates instead of the in-state rates. We need to start looking out for the U.S. citizen first, and that I could not. I'm 180 degrees opposed to that person that sent the email. He's bought into the drivel that we have to bring in more from foreign countries. We've got talented people right here in the United States that with training in our institutions of higher education can do any job that those from Asia can do. I totally disagree with him, and if I'm elected president, we're going to do all we can to clamp down on these H-1B visas and the job-killing aspects they have for the American citizen.
Virgil Good, Constitution Party candidate for president, thanks for joining us this hour. We really appreciate it.
And thank you, Ann. It was a pleasure being with you.
That's Virgil Good. He's a Constitution Party candidate for president. Coming up, we're going to hear from Rocky Anderson, the Justice Party candidate for president. So stay with us. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Start your day with local updates from the award-winning WOSU News team.
It was easy enough for the president to stir up the emotions of the thousands of students and others who attended his latest Ohio address, this time on the Ohio State University Oval.
Hello, Buckeyes!
Hear the latest in local and national news on Morning Edition on 89.7 NPR News, your all-day NPR news station.
This is 89.7 NPR News. Light rain in downtown Columbus, 36 degrees. Some rain mixing with snow and wind gusts as high as 50 miles per hour today. Rain afternoon and a high of 42. Some rain for tonight and a rain-snow mix overnight, a low of 36 degrees. And stay with us for All Sides with Ann Fisher in 20 minutes at 11 o'clock. It's Tech Tuesday, and we'll have some thoughts on the new iPad mini and much more. That's Tech Tuesday from 11 till noon. Support for 89.7 comes from Montgomery & Associates, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, offering perspective in a time of economic uncertainty to help grow and maintain wealth. More information is available online at themontgomerysolution.com. And All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
We're talking about third-party candidates this hour, how they matter and what they bring to the table and what they might take away. Joining us now is former Salt Lake City Mayor Rocky Anderson, the newly formed Justice Party's presidential candidate. Welcome to the show, Mr. Anderson.
Good morning, Ann.
The Justice Party is not quite a year old now, right? And you're in the process of drafting a more detailed platform for next year's convention. Is the Justice Party really ready for prime time then? Is it moving too fast?
Well, we started the party last December, and you know, a lot of people were saying, how can you run a presidential race in a year?
Mm-hmm.
You realize, just given that question, how absurd it is in this country, how long races go, how expensive they are. There's no other country that has presidential races that last anywhere near as long as they do in this country. Look at all we've been able to do in 1 year. We've gotten appearances across the country. A lot of the news media, although certainly the corporate-owned media isn't doing much with third parties, they love the very constricted terms of the debate between Romney and Obama. But we have built an amazing base of support with state parties in just about every state in the country so far. So this is a good way to launch not only a political party, but my main concern was that we build a broad-based democratic people's movement in this country to push all of us together to get the corrupting influence of money out of our government, to get back to constitutional principles. I don't think that we've ever seen two consecutive administrations, the Bush and the Obama administrations, that have had such utter contempt and disregard for basic human and civil rights, and then the way that the Democrats and Republicans for years have caved in to the demands of Wall Street, to the insurance companies, the fossil fuel industry, completely betraying the public interest. So we can do this in this country, but it's going to take a sustained movement. It's not going to happen in one election.
We were talking to Virgil Good a few minutes ago, the Constitution Party candidate for president, and he was talking about how the Constitution Party comes up, appears on different state ballots under different names. And I read that you've taken the approach of seeking the nomination of a variety of parties from state to state, putting on the ballot, I guess, the Justice Party in several states, the Natural Law Party in Michigan, the Oregon Progressive Party.
Yes.
You did not make it on the ballot in Ohio, but tell us about that and how and the advantages and the disadvantages of doing it that way.
Well, there some of these parties have ballot slots preserved because of successes in prior years. So I was nominated besides the two state parties you talked about, also the Independent Party in New Mexico,
okay,
and the Independent Party in Connecticut. So we basically see eye to eye on the issues. To me, it's not about which party it is. It's where you stand on the issues and what we can all do together. And even if you have a few disagreements on the fundamentals, I think there is massive agreement in this country, and yet we're being betrayed year after year by Congress. So, yeah, we were very pleased to get the nominations of those other parties. But we're on the ballot in 15 states, either as the Justice Party, me running as an independent, or as the nominee of these state political parties. And then we have write-in status in 25 states. So if anybody goes to our website, it's voterocky.org, you'll see on the very front page a map, and it'll show you the status in your state. But, you know, you were talking about the importance of third parties and what can be accomplished. A great deal is accomplished. Even if you lose the election, you can come out winning on the issues by building tremendous momentum and a public call for real change. And that's exactly why we're doing what we're doing in this race. And it's why we encourage people, and particularly in safe states, states where you know what the result's going to be, absolutely vote for an alternative to send the message that you're very displeased with the way things are going, because it does make a difference over time. It made a huge difference when Teddy Roosevelt ran with the Progressive mm-hmm. Party, and certainly made a difference when Ross Perot ran with the Reform Party.
Ahmed in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Ahmed.
Yes, how you guys doing?
Good.
Another wonderful show. And, you know, all these parties have such great ideas, but we all know that we do need a one-third party in the United States. You know, we don't have a lot of choices. Is there any way that all of these independent parties, maybe they can all get together and form one third party? And I know a lot of them have different ideas and different plans, but so is the Republicans and the Democrats. Is there a chance that all of these independent small parties can get together with Ralph Nader and Perot and all these great people that we've had, all these great Americans that they had, all these great ideas? Is there any way for them to form a third party? That's my question.
Rocky Anderson?
That's a great question. I think my way of looking at this is, can we form a real second party? Because there, although there are some differences between Republicans and Democrats in terms of their corporatism, in terms of their militarism, they are one and the same. And I agree with the caller. It'd be great if we could get everybody to join together under one banner. But I got to tell you, the libertarians, for instance, I know that there are a lot of young people who love the challenge to the establishment, but I don't think that a lot of people understand that Gary Johnson and Ron Paul are so anti-government and so laissez-faire corporatist. They would leave it to corporations to determine what kind of environmental controls there are going to be. They'd leave it to the corporate sector to determine what kind of offshore drilling there's going to be. They wouldn't provide any governmental leadership on climate change. They're against the Department of Education. They're against, really, any federal funding for education. So I think it would be hard to form one political party that crosses those boundaries. But I think on a lot of the issues, like ending the wars, stopping the toadying to Wall Street at the expense of the American people, ending the empire building, on a lot of these fundamental issues, we definitely can come together. And that certainly includes, well, it doesn't include getting the corrupting money out of government, because Gary Johnson said the other night during a debate, and he said in his written materials, that he doesn't think there should be any limit on corporate funding of campaigns, that he's in favor of super PACs. He thinks that's a matter of individual freedom and First Amendment rights. I'm totally in disagreement with him on that point.
Thank you, Ahmed, for that call. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Take care.
Thank you, Ahmed.
614-292-8513. If you have a comment or a question for my guest, Rocky Anderson, he is the presidential candidate for the newly formed Justice Party, formed in December. He's running under different party labels in different states. If you want to know more about that, we'll post his website on our website at WOSU.org/allsides. We have an email from Mike in Mansfield. He writes, if the Commission on Presidential Debates would open the hyped presidential debates to some, quote, reasonable, end quote, threshold, electoral college viable, federal matching funds, etc., for free media exposure for the main 30 third parties, do you think we could successfully break the two-party horse race narrative?
I absolutely do. If I had been included in those debates between Obama and Romney, they would have been extremely different debates. We would have talked about ending dependence on fossil fuels. We would have talked about an immediate end to the war in Afghanistan. And I would have asked the president directly, justify the American people the loss of one more life in that conflict. And why is this 2014 withdrawal such a magic date? Well, lives are being sacrificed and we're generating so much hatred and hostility. I would have challenged them on the drone killings. I would have challenged them on the war on drugs, which was never mentioned, or our record incarceration rate. We have the highest incarceration rate in the world. No talk at all about climate change during any of these presidential or vice presidential debates. But the reason you won't hear these third-party voices is because the Commission on Presidential Debates is a creation of the Republican and Democratic parties. They formed the commission so that they could hijack it away, the debates, away from the League of Women Voters, which did handle the debates in an unbiased, objective fashion. So these two parties, they are a duopoly. They have total control. They have a stranglehold on our entire electoral system, from the ballot access process all the way through to the debates. And certainly then, with the corporate media falling right in line, Americans really don't hear the other points of view. And if you took a look at my positions on the issues, on the major issues, compared with Obama and Romney's positions, you'll find time after time that I represent what the polls show that the majority of the American people want. The majority of American people are so far out ahead of the Republicans and Democrats on issue after issue, such as ending the budget-busting Bush tax cuts, as ending immediately the war in Afghanistan, ending the war on drugs. The American people have had it with that, but the Republicans and Democrats never want to talk about it because it's not in their political interest. And certainly the failure to address the climate change issue, which is the most consequential and urgent issue facing our planet, is so absolutely irresponsible. But we won't see that kind of leadership until these debates are opened up and there is a more democratic dialogue and process.
Tim in the North Campus area. Welcome to the show, Tim.
Yes, good morning, Ann. Thank you so much for having this program.
You're welcome.
I have a couple of things to say. Thanks, Gary. You're the man, Rocky Anderson, and I'm probably going to write you in. I was leaning toward Jill Stein, but I'm concerned as to how the duopoly muscled out the League of Women Voters and whether or not they'll have any input in the debate coming up Sunday night, hosted by Ralph Nader in Washington, and or did they have any influence on the Chicago debate that I was fortunate enough to catch on McNeil Lear NewsHour a few days ago? They had 12-minute excerpts.
Oh, but that's
you're
great.
Right on target. You're right that's on great. Target. I was thrilled. I called people in Philadelphia. The independents are rising in this country. 40% of the people are disgusted with the duopoly stranglehold on the conversation. Bankruptcy is the issue. We're going over the cliffs, and the wars are absolutely unwinnable and tragic. They're bankrupting us.
What you've expressed there and the passion with which you expressed is what we're seeing all over the country. The majority of people, according to the polls, want to see a major third-party candidate. They want to see media treatment. Millions of people have left both the Republican and Democratic parties in the last 4 years, and there are more people now who identify themselves as independents than as either Republicans or Democrats. So this does need to be opened up in every way. The debates are a good way to do it. I wish these debates that were recently held had been held earlier, but Amy Goodman on Democracy Now! Did have Jill Stein and me on, along with the presidential debates, basically expanded those debates. All of those debates, by the way, including the one in Chicago the other night, which was hosted and organized by Free and Equal Elections Foundation, are on our website. If you go to voterocky.org and then go to news and media, all of those, including a lot of the interviews that I've had, are there. Just click on television. But to answer your first question, Tim, the commission had no input in the Chicago debates, and they have no input in the debate that's going to be held Sunday in Washington, D.C., and moderated by Ralph Nader. Those were completely independent of the Republican and Democratic parties and the commission. But Obama and Romney were invited to participate in the Chicago debate. They, of course, didn't respond. But as I said, if you watch their debate and see what a constricted range of debate there was between them. I mean, they're talking about drilling. And Mitt Romney says he wants to drill all over the place. What's President Obama's response? Well, we've done more drilling on public lands during my administration than ever before.
Well, those issues are important to some people, Rocky Anderson. Are you saying it's just because they were so narrow? You think they were too narrow and they should have gotten into more issues? Is that your point?
No, okay. They should have gotten into more issues, but I'm saying as to those issues, they are important, but where they are on the issues, there's very little light mm-hmm. between them. There okay. should have been others with very different points of view discussing those same issues, but pointing out that this reliance, for instance, on fossil fuels and more drilling offshore and on public lands, especially in the Arctic, is a horrendous idea and is a real disservice not only to our world now, but to the future.
I want to take another quick call. And Tim in North Campus, thanks for your call real quick because we're running out of time. Rocky Anderson, this is from William in Cincinnati. Welcome, William. We're running out of time. So please tell us what you want to talk about.
I'd like for the candidate for the Justice Department to explain what does the Justice Department stand on civil rights in general.
Okay. Civil rights. Great. Thank you, William. Rocky
Anderson.
Yeah,
a lot of people make that mistake and call us the Justice Department. Yeah. It's the Justice Party. And I was a civil rights lawyer. I did a lot of work in civil rights. And it's one of the reasons we formed this party and one of the reasons I decided to run for president was because we could not stand by silently anymore after the Bush and Obama years and the horrendous civil and human rights abuses, everything from claiming that the federal government should be able to indefinitely detain American citizens without charges, trial, legal assistance, or the right of habeas corpus, the targeting of U.S. citizens for assassination, the declaration of a state of emergency by President Obama and placing NORTHCOM, a military unit, mm-hmm. over the United States, for the first time since the Posse Comitatus Act, the drone killings generating more hatred and hostility toward the United States, the unbelievable the amendment to the FISA. Sorry, you're finished, aren't you?
No, we're running out of time, though, Rocky Anderson, and I just want to take the time to say thank you to you.
Thank you, Ann. I really appreciate it.
Rocky Anderson.
Thanks for helping get out the word.
You bet. Rocky Anderson, he's Justice Party candidate for president. Thanks to everybody for listening. This is All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
This is listener-supported WOSU 89.7 and WOSU HD1 Columbus, streaming on the web at WOSU.org. 89.7 NPR News, your all-day NPR news station, a service of WOSU Public Media. And be sure to join WOSU TV tonight and celebrate beloved television icon Ellen DeGeneres, the latest recipient of the Kennedy Center Mark Twain Prize for American Humor. Some of the biggest names in comedy salute DeGeneres, including Jimmy Kimmel, Jane Lynch, Lily Tomlin, and many more. Watch Ellen DeGeneres win the Mark Twain Prize tonight at 8 on WOSU TV. Expect some rain mixing with snow today, turning into mostly rain for this afternoon, a high of 42 degrees. Rain mixing with snow overnight tonight and a low of 36. Expect wind gusts today of up to 50 miles per hour at times. Support for 89.7 comes from COSI, where middle school girls will meet women engineers and explore careers in engineering during COSI's Girls Discover Engineering program on November 10th. Scholarships are available. Details online at cosi.org or by calling 614-228-2674.
Apple and Google are duking it out in a nonviolent retail way with dueling product unveilings this week. On one hand, smaller tablets, on the other, souped-up phones. Coming up on Tech Tuesday, Geek.com blogger and gadget guy Russell Holly joins us to talk about the Nexus 10, the Nexus 7, the new MacBook Pro, and Apple's newest baby, the iPad Mini. But first, the faceless thieves who are stealing millions of dollars right from under our noses as we play with social media. That's all next on Tech Tuesday, after the news on All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News and streaming at WOSU.org/allsides.